and we'll say, I'm gonna sing out, I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on,
I'm gonna march on,
gonna put one foot in front of the other foot.
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on,
I'm gonna march on,
I got to keep on going.
I'm gonna sing out,
gonna march on,
I'm gonna march on.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Browning, and welcome to Benders of the Arc podcast, where we interview movers and shakers for social change. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. famously said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
The next two episodes are dedicated to the prophetic and often heroic efforts by people in the First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto, a member of the Presbyterian Church USA, to make this denomination a more welcoming and inclusive place for LGBTQ people. It's no secret that LGBTQ folk have been discriminated against in the church for decades and ostracized from membership, serving as deacons and elders as well as from ordained ministry, and being prevented from getting married in the church, preventing them from having their relationships honored and recognized. Now, many churches claim to be welcoming to LGBTQ people, but are unwilling to proclaim that welcome quite the way that they have at First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto. In our conversation today, you will hear reference to an organization called More Light Presbyterians. This nonprofit organization has been advocating for LGBTQ rights and inclusion for decades within the Presbyterian Church USA. And one of the first churches to become a More Light Church was the First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto. Their session approved that move in February of 1986. For more information about that, please see our blog at bendersoftheark.com. Because of the work of More Light Presbyterians and churches like First Presbyterian Church of Palo Alto and many individuals in the church, the denomination has moved from exclusion of LGBTQ people to full inclusion in ministry and marriage. But in these two episodes, we want to look back at the early days of this work. My guests are Derek Cacucci and Craig Wiesner, two beloved gay members of the First Press community, and the Reverend Dr. Diana Gibson, who is a close friend and was also their pastor for many years. I began by asking Derek and Craig how they met.
We basically met at a Hewlett-Packard pool party. HP actually had an underground lesbian, gay, transgender group. And so they had various social events. I tended to shy away from any social events, but I was there because a friend of mine wanted to get taken to the airport, so I was there to meet him. He met his boyfriend the night before, so he never showed up, so I was kind of like there waiting for him to arrive. Craig was at the...
My roommate at the time worked at Hewlett-Packard and dragged me to this party because I had broken up with somebody and I was all grumpy and he was tired of me being grumpy. So he said, "You're coming to this party," and he dragged me to this party.
We were at opposite ends of the party.
It's a pool party with, you know, a lot of really good-looking young people, and I just felt like I didn't fit in.
What year was this?
1989.
Yeah, that would have been 1989.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe probably 1988.
Maybe 88.
The tail end of 1988.
Yeah.
During the summer, we were at opposite ends of the party, and a very unusually strange man was hitting on the both of us. And so we started moving closer and closer.
He would go from one end of the room to the other to sit next to one of us and try talking. And then when it wasn't working, he'd go to the other end of the room to talk to the
and
other.
We find ourselves kind of edging away. And before we knew it, we were sitting next to each other. And we started talking to each other.
Yeah.
we exchanged phone numbers at the end of our time together, and me in my usual absent-minded way, it went to the wash, so it became this glob of ink that I couldn't read. And so at that point, Craig thought I was playing hard to get.
And my roommate just kept nagging me, call him, call him, call him. Finally, one day I said, all right, I'll call him. And he answered the phone, and we made a date, and that's...
The rest is history.
Yeah, the next thing we did together was there was an organization called High Tech Gaze that came out of the Billy DeFrank Center. And they had an annual barbecue picnic. Hmm. And so we went to that.
That was our first
together. Date. That was our first date. Hmm.
And how did you find your way to First Press?
So there was a kind of an interesting process of getting there. I used to kiddingly say that the reason I ended up becoming a Presbyterian was because I went to the Gay Pride Parade in San Francisco, and Presbyterians for Lesbian Gay Concerns had the cutest contingent. So that's why I became a Presbyterian. But in actuality, I had actually gone to a Presbyterian church before, and it actually had a bad experience in one particular church, which got me to leave the Presbyterian church for a couple of years.
Where was that? Locally here?
It was local. Uh-huh. It was local. And so because of that, I did not leave the church. I ended up becoming part of the Metropolitan Community Church for a few years.
In San Jose?
In San Jose.
And when I met Derek, he was at that point going to both MCC, Metropolitan, and First Presbyterian Church.
So, but at that point, in honesty, I did know of Mitzi Henderson. A lot of people did within the community. And so I did know about a couple of more light churches. I went to one, but could not see any reason why they would actually be a more light church because there was nothing they were visibly doing, but then went to First Press and found quite a different experience. I got the ultimate welcome. I think Diana called me to welcome and say she was glad I was here, and Dick Sims called me to ask if I wanted to be on a committee, which I think is the ultimate welcome in a first press. And that committee was to sponsor the first More Light National Conference. And so that was an important committee to be on. But in fact, we probably, Diana and me had probably met a year before at a retreat center. And so that
Which retreat center?
Actually, I don't remember. Yeah.
They were attending two different things.
Yeah, we were there for two different reasons. And just someone who knew me from this church, knew Derek from the gay community, I guess, just said, oh, you two should know each other. Mm-hmm. And we stood in the hallway and talked for quite a while.
Or out on the bench.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and so it was kind of interesting because that was kind of foreshadowed my life at First Press and our friendship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Great. So had First Press already, sounds like they had already established LGBTQ ministry and outreach.
Well, they had already done a few things in that area, but it was only a year after they became a More Light Church.
Okay, which we think happened about 1987.
Exactly.
Right there, yeah.
Okay.
Back in either the late 70s or early 80s, before I came, and I came in 86, First Presbyterian Church had supported a out lesbian woman who had gone to seminary and wanted to be ordained in the Presbyterian Church. And at that point, the Presbyterian Church refused. So I think it's important to just, depending on who's listening to this, to realize that kind of the ramifications of this discrimination had two major parts. One was around acknowledging and celebrating the marriage of people of the same sex. Mm. And the other was around ordination, which included ordination for elders and deacons, which are, you know, very common. So they couldn't be ordained either. Anyway, this woman had gone to seminary, wanted to be ordained by the presbytery. That's a presbytery level decision. And the presbytery, I wasn't around at this point, but the presbytery turned her down. And there was a lot of, I mean, this church really pushed on it. Mm-hmm. by the time I came, I've actually don't think I have ever actually met the woman, but that was kind of their legacy. And through that, they had kind of realized that this was an issue they cared about. But they had not taken what for our denomination is the formal stance of becoming a more light church. So we started a process that as the associate pastor I got assigned to do, I'm sure it had something to do with my passion too, but of having a dialogue about becoming a more light church. And certainly Tom and Mitzi Henderson were influencing that as well. Is that what I said?
Minako.
In Minako, yeah. That it was, and the story of Joan Abrams, this other woman, had influenced it. You know, some people had really already thought about this and thought about the injustice. And And so we did a process, knowing that Session was actually the decision-making body, and Session was pretty unanimous on it. Session really wanted to wait and do a whole process of study and dialogue with the congregation and not just move ahead without that.
And how did that go? I mean, sounds like, from what I've heard, there was a lot of discussion. I don't know, studies? What did Joel do?
There were studies. I mean, we're First Pres Church. We study everything. I remember a series of studies, kind of adult study type things. And then I remember two, maybe three dialogue, really specific. Okay, now we're going to talk about what we really want to talk about. And what we really feel, kind of at a more feeling level, and be honest with each other with, a very systematic process of dialoguing around differences and things like that. And what really came out was, this is how I look back on it, is it felt like even people who were hesitant knew that it had more to do with them than the rightness of the taking this stance. And the dialogue was never acrimonious. It was never angry. There was never name calling. And there were a handful of people that said, I don't think we should do this. You know, we're going to lose other members. It goes against Presbyterian policy. I'm not ready. I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't some homophobia in there at all, but it was like even they were rising above that in the process. There was one couple that left the church over this, one pledging couple, but they left peaceably. You know, like, okay, you've made this decision, we really can't live with it, but we respect you. And there was no fireworks, no bitter feelings.
Was there ever, I don't know, a vote of the congregation about this? I mean, was it something that you took to as a congregational vote or just a congregational discussion?
It was more a discussion. I mean, I know that the congregation, I mean, this is where our memories could be a little, my memory could be a little mixed up, but I know it's a session vote. And my memory was we were really, you know, asking members of the congregation to tell us what they thought, to tell the session, to really communicate. We were very open. And Session knew exactly who had hesitations and who didn't, that kind of thing. And was very respectful the whole process. But it was, we did not vote as a congregation because we're Presbyterian and this is a session decision.
One story, and Diana and I are realizing that she and Dick are remembering it slightly differently, but it's still
Dick Sims,
who was the pastor at the time.
The other pastor at the time.
Co-pastors, right?
Or eventually.
Yeah, by the time you were here, I think we were co-pastors.
So, but Dick's memory of the session vote was that that there was one person on session who just was not there with respect to being able to vote for it and was vocal about that. Dick and other members of the session, you know, really compassionately worked through that and at one point asked, is there anything we could do to this resolution that would allow you to vote for this. And in Dick's telling of it, that person said, well, no, I can't change my mind about this, but because of the compassion and the process that's been used, I'm willing to abstain. And so rather than having a vote against becoming a more light church, there was an
Well, let's take a break there. And when we come back, Diana will share with us how the church really had a sense of moving to our best selves. We'll be right back.
And we'll say, I'm gonna sing out. I'm gonna march on. And everybody said,
I'm gonna sing out.
Gonna march on.
If you are new to our podcast, please visit our blog at bendersoftheark.com, where you can find more information about our stories and the people behind them. Now let's return to our guest.
There was a sense of moving to our best selves that came through prayer and dialogue and compassion and respect. That was really quite remarkable. Because this was, I mean, not only, I mean, there was even some discussion, are we breaking the law if we do a same-sex marriage? Which, you know, that's civil law, but we're clearly going against the denominational law. It was a slow, thorough process, but it never felt, there was never any meanness about it.
Interesting when you think about it, because later in the fights that would happen at presbytery level, over whether or not the denomination should be welcoming of lesbians and gays, when there was going to be a vote happening, and prior to that vote, there were small group discussions where people shared their stories and shared where they were coming from on that particular issue. In every case when they did that, the votes were in favor of inclusion and welcoming, and the conversations were mostly kind. You know, we saw the better selves. And the powers that be, realizing that, at a certain point in this long fight, said there will be no more discussions. There will on future
no
votes,
more stories,
no sure. storytelling. There will we will huh. debate. We will not let small groups sit together and talk. And they didn't. They didn't allow that anymore. So it's interesting that they powers that be that wanted to keep people oppressed realized that true story sharing and conversation amongst people on totally different sides of an issue still resulted in justice being coming to the forefront. And that's what happened here. Is it, you know, pretty much on the same page about many things, people who respected each other and disagreed about this, but did it in a way that was healthy.
And our church worked closely, I can think of two, with two ministers, one congregation and two ministers who were very much against full inclusion of the LGBTQ community. And in both cases, because of our dialogues, I still have in some file letters from them saying, I will never vote against this. I may abstain. But I could not vote against the real people I've met. Really to amount of deep respect.
Wow, that's powerful. And I seem to recall, Derek, you being, I don't know if it was a commissioner or for serving on one of the presbytery committees.
It was both. It started with getting voted to be a delegate to the 210th General Assembly in Pittsburgh.
I don't know where it was.
What year was that?
It was Charlottesville.
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Oh. What year was that? Do you
remember? No. 90-something?
8, something like that.
Oh, okay.
So it started with that.
And what was that? Was there pushback at the Presbytery?
That was a very contentious process. Both Diana and I were recipients of some pretty harsh and mean phone calls and letters.
Particularly you.
Particularly me, although sometimes they use you to get the letter to me, as I learned. But, you know, the, a particularly tough issue was one letter which basically said our church's hands are on the doorknobs of the church, ready to leave based on whether or not you turn down being a delegate.
So let me set the story up of how he became the commissioner, though, how he got elected to be that. To be eligible to be a commissioner, you have to have attended a certain number of presbytery meetings. Mm-hmm. You had to be a pretty reliable attendee. And there were three people running for commissioner for this particular General Assembly. One was a fairly overwhelmingly beloved man who all sides of all issues liked. One was a really odd man who most people were very uncomfortable with. Sweet, but very odd and somewhat troublesome. And there was Derek, who some people knew and liked, some people didn't know, but there was a little bit of whispering that, you know, I think he's gay. And everyone was positive that the very affable, kind, smart person that was running was the one everyone was going to vote for. No problem.
But we elected two, right?
Alternate. But the only one for that General Assembly.
By that time.
At that time. The gentleman who everybody was going to vote for had a heart attack the night before the presbytery meeting. And you can't be voted for if you're not at the presbytery meeting when they vote for the commissioners.
Mm.
And so there were two choices. The odd gentleman who very few people really were comfortable with, and this guy that some people knew, some people didn't know, but whatever, he won.
Oh.
But the moment that happened, that evening, that very evening, we started getting phone calls from people in presbytery wanting to talk to him and meet with him and had discussed this terrible thing that was about to happen, that a homosexual was going to be.
At the end of that presbytery meeting, the presbytery exec came to me and said, they don't even know that they elected a gay man. And I said, but they will know that they elected a very good commissioner, elder, and Christian.
Yes.
But they found out that he's also a gay man.
And we went through months. They wanted him to step down. They wanted him to step aside and let the alternate go. They demanded he do that. They wanted to meet with him privately. Mm-hmm. Okay, if it's not alone, at least you could have Diana there with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek's position, I think your position, was really clear. We can meet. We can talk about this. I understand you have issues, but it's got to be in public.
So I said basically that we can have a table during lunch, and anybody could come and be part of this. I think this would be actually a very good
ask whatever questions you want.
Any reasonable way to handle this, and I got a response that basically said, "We are very sorry to hear that you refuse to meet with us." Which meant that if I was not willing to meet in private, uh-huh. I was not willing to meet with them.
Uh-huh.
I will say that the leaders of Presbytery at the time were extremely supportive.
Yes.
And very fair-handed.
Yes.
I mean, they weren't like taking a side on the issue, but they were saying this is the process. He got elected. Everything was done decently and in order.
The sad parts about it were twofold. One was going to presbytery meetings and people physically stand up,
turn their backs,
and then basically walk to the others, to another pew, so they would not be next to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was offset by the fact that I had wonderful people like Diana, the Browns on either side of Sarah Dick Johnson. I felt very, very supported whenever I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of one thing that still sits in my mind. The other that more importantly sits in my mind was during that period of time, many people who were privately admitted to me that they were gay or lesbian, which was a very sacred thing to know about.
Ordained folks.
Ordained folks.
Uh-huh.
And to see one by one each of them leave our presbytery was very, very sad.
Leave the denomination.
Mm-hmm. That was one thing that always kind of stuck in my heart, particularly when people would constantly say from the other pew that you don't know how many people we have lost because of this ordination mm-hmm, issue. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I would have to respond, yes, you really don't know
how many people you've lost.
Yeah. Lost. Mm-hmm. And I know you're not talking about them.
Mm-hmm, and the end of the battle where Derek simply said, I'm not resigning, I am going, I was elected commissioner. The end of that was, you will pay for this someday. Huh. Somebody at Presbytery literally saying, you will pay for this someday.
Mm-hmm. The time after that, after I returned, I was again able to be eligible to become a chair of the Committee on Representation and Empowerment, again because of the fact that I'd been a commissioner and also because of the fact I still had a pretty stellar attendance record. Apparently a lot of people didn't. They left like the Presbytery meetings.
Why?
But anyway, that was a tough time because it was a time of a different moderator who really didn't like my presence mm-hmm, there mm-hmm. or my presence on console. Mm-hmm. Whenever we would get together, we would start with a meal at a console meeting, and he would deliberately walk away from me and go around the table, do anything to get away from me. It was at that time that I learned the radical nature of communion, because our presbytery meetings always started with communion, and I always made a point of taking communion from him so that at one point we would have to see each other as people of faith at least once during that meeting.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, let's take another break there. And thank you, Craig and Derek and Diana, for sharing this important story with us. Thank you for joining us for this conversation today. Remember, you can find part two of this series at bendersoftheark.com, along with pictures of Derek and Craig's wedding and documentation of First Press Church becoming a more like church. Until next time, this is your host, Jeff Browning, reminding you to keep bending the moral arc of the universe toward justice for all God's people.